Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Lindsay W., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Houston, Texas. Today is Tuesday, June 3rd, 2025. And today we are reading from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the chapter Working with Others. And we are on page 101, the second paragraph. In our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism through one paragraph that ends, to do the impossible, have always failed. And we will be commenting on that one paragraph. Today's readers are, for the 12 steps, we have Charlotte W., 12 Traditions, and Marie M. And our readers of the text this morning are Jessica C. and Patrick O. And Susan S.H. is our backup reader. The reference numbers for yesterday, Monday, June 2nd, are as follows. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, it's 22,485. And 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, it's 22,486. 22486. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So I will now ask Charlotte W. to please read the 12 steps.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing me to serve. This is Charlotte W. in DeSoto, Texas. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. God bless you. Have a good day.
Thank you so much, Charlotte W. And next, I will ask Anne Marie M. to please read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Anne Marie.
Yeah, good morning, Lindsay. This is Anne Marie M. in South Carolina. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you, Anne-Marie M. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute, and once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. And this morning, we resume our study of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the chapter Working with Others, page 101, that second paragraph. In our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism, through one paragraph ending, to do the impossible, have always failed. And I will now ask Jessica C. to please begin reading.
Thanks, Lindsay. Jessica C., recovered compulsive overeater from Ontario, Canada. In our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation is doomed to failure. If the alcoholic tries to shield himself, he may succeed for a time, but he usually winds up with a bigger explosion than ever. We have tried these methods. These attempts to do the impossible have always failed. I can definitely relate to this paragraph. Before I came to OA, and even in my earlier days in OA, I did try to shield myself. I remember when I was living with my brother and I asked him to hide the cookies from me, or to dole them out to me, to sort of portion them out to me. But I always found them, and I always ate them. And, I remember taking a trip with my sister, and this was early in OA, and I asked her to monitor my eating. I basically was asking her to sort of be my bodyguard around food, and none of those methods worked. And it makes me think about, meetings, very well-intentioned OA meetings, where we're asked to not mention food. I remember being at those meetings and then just realizing the contradiction, because I would leave the meeting and inevitably see, a billboard or drive past a fast food restaurant. Food is just everywhere. It's ubiquitous. And impossible for me to avoid. And I remember when I first realized that it was food that I am addicted to, and just feeling like, God, why does it have to be food? You know, food is everywhere. And that's what I need, you know, God. I need an infinite power to remove this obsession from me, because like the paragraph says, these attempts to do the impossible will fail. For me, and I've heard some really great shares about this the past few days, like for me, it is about my spiritual fitness, not about more control. It's God who removes the compulsion by working the steps, that I can't explain how it happened, but I can tell you that that was my experience. I had to go through that experience of working the steps in entire abstinence, and during that process, obsession was just, it was like just removed from me. So yeah, I have to put my hope in God, who is ever present. And I, you know, a couple years into this abstinence that I have today, I have to keep asking myself, like, am I protecting this spiritual status? Am I, you know, for me, am I rigorously practicing steps 10, 11, and 12? To maintain this neutrality with food, and to maintain, you know, neutrality with my character defects as well. You know, as I hear someone share on this line quite a bit, that the removal of the food obsession is just God's opening act. And for me, like, if I start to think I don't need to continue to do these spiritual practices, that's for me a lack of humility. So am I practicing humility? And I think I'm at time. So I think with that, I will pass. Thanks, Lindsay.
Thank you so much, Jessica C. from Ontario, Canada, for getting us started this morning. And although we value your experience, we do ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So who would like to share on this paragraph this morning?
Nancy P.
Amy M.
Victoria L.
Nicole L.
All right, let me tell you who I've heard so far. I've heard Nancy P. I believe I heard Amy, Katie,
yes.
I heard Harlan G., and I heard Nicole L. Who did I miss?
Victoria L., Muncie, Indiana.
Gotcha. Victoria. Anybody else want to get in on this first lineup?
Andrea B.
Gotcha. Andrea. All right. Let's start here. I've got Nancy P., Amy, Katie, Harlan G., Nicole L., Victoria L., and Andrea B. So Nancy P., you're up, followed by Amy.
Hi, good morning. I'm Nancy P., recovering from West Newton, Massachusetts. Thank you for letting me share. So when I asked this morning about what were we reading and you told me, you know, this is a paragraph, I thought, you know, my one comment was, I concur, you know. And when I was thinking about it, you know, until this minute and listening to the lead chair, and, you know, I love the word scheme, and because it means that I've got all these machinations going on, you know, like if I do this and if I do that, you know, it's like juggling snakes, and it's exhausting. That's the thing. When I was eating compulsively, and I was in this program for a long time, almost five decades before I recovered, and I was always tired. And unsatisfied. I'd stop eating, and my perennial question was, why am I still so angry? I did what they said. I stopped. I put the food down, you know, forgetting that, you know, what they said to do was all the other stuff between the doctor's opinion and working with others. And, you know, once I did that stuff, I found what they said. I found comfort in this. Now, to be comforted, to me, is not rushing around and being frantic and wondering and hoping and lying and cheating and sneaking and stealing and picking and licking. That's not comforting. That's tiring, exhausting. And, you know, today my benchmarks are, I don't hurt myself with food under any circumstances. I help other people. Wild turkey. I'm happy, joyously free. I comprehend the word serenity, and I know peace. And that's comforting to me. That's relaxing. And all the things that I used to do that I've heard on this line from many of us, the dieting, the, you know, scheming, basically, like lying and all that, and just all the dishonesty, I left that, you know, I divested myself from that. And because none of that stuff worked. And the longer I did that stuff, the shorter amount of time that it worked. But the one thing that's worked, like a charm, from day one, from minute one, it continues to work, is one thing and one thing only. Say it with me. Surrender, surrender, surrender. And my surrender grows every day. And I have new opportunities to enjoy that, to embrace it. Sometimes I don't like it, but I still have these opportunities. And I'll wrap up by saying that, you know, if anybody doubts it, think about, you know, what your life is like when you're serene. I mean, my life today, every breath I take is filled with joy and light. Even when my life sucks, which it often does, it's still worlds better than when I was frantic and worrying and scheming and trying and failing and all that. So with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Nancy P. in Massachusetts. And then next up is Amy. I did not get the first letter of your last name, followed by Katie. Same thing. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning. Thank you. This is Amy M.C., recovered compulsive overeater in Massachusetts. And what really is coming to mind to me this morning is the way that other methods have failed. You know, the way that I tried people, places, and things to stop this food obsession, you know, to stop overeating, to stop obsessing about the food. And the only thing that has ever worked for me is recovery and program, the 12 steps and God and working with others. I mean, the only thing, right? It is the 12 steps. It is all of it. It is using this book as a guide, as my textbook, as, you know, my foundation. And yes, now I don't want to be around people who are, you know, in whatever thing, who aren't serene, you know. The other thing that's standing out is the idea of serenity. And I have so many daily readers that I read and meditate on a daily basis that it's just funny because I had to, you know, in order to read them all, there goes my perfectionism, but in order to read them all and fully connect, you know, I get up super early. I still don't get to them all. I read them on my lunch break. I read them at bedtime. Oh, it came to me. Hey, you have enough to break it up into like 7 days worth. Oh, okay. So one of my mantras that I read one of the 7 mornings is serenity is clear thinking. And what I continually go back to is, where is my thinking? God, direct my thinking. Because my obsession starts in the mind, you know? It's, what am I ignoring? What am I worried about? What am I overthinking? What is taking me away from this present moment? And for me, it's usually something that I'm avoiding dealing with. I don't like to do hard things, and meaning, I don't like confrontation. I don't like having to advocate for myself, worrying about if other people are going to be offended. You know, so what do I do? Or what did I do? I ate over it. And thank God that has been relieved for this moment. You know, I get to eat my abstinent meals, weighed and measured, praying to God, please direct my thinking throughout the day. I get to be of service. I get to show up, participate in meetings. I get to carry a message and live this, practice these principles in all my affairs. Because all those other things that I tried, they don't work, folks. Nope. I tried them too much, too hard, too many times. even gave up on God. I was like, fine, I can't play anymore. You're not doing this for me. I shared this with another fellow recently, and they were like, I never heard that one, you know, because, thank you, and I'll pass with this. You know, I had to consciously be like, oh, no, I'm not praying. God help. Nope, I can't pray. Today, I get to put my hand in God's and walk along this path with all of you and with God leading us. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Amy MC in Massachusetts. Next up is Katie, followed by Harlan G. Good morning, Katie. I'm pretty sure I heard a Katie. I just didn't hear the first initial of your last name, if you are there. All right, I guess I didn't hear a Katie. So let's go on. Harlan G, followed by Nicole L.
Thank you very much. And if you, moderator, thank you for your service. If you give me a non-gentle reminder at 3 minutes, because there's trucks and I'm out walking and cars and everything. I'm Harlan G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. The bottom of page 84 of the big book and all of 85 up to where it says step 11 tells me about neutrality, how at this stage, step 10, going into step 11, I will have achieved a position of neutrality when it comes to food. Sanity will have returned. But what does it say? There's a warning, and it says, as long as I'm in fit spiritual condition, and that's what I have to remember. I have to remain in fit spiritual condition. I'm out walking. I walk 3 miles a day, 6 days a week. If I miss a day, I miss a day, but I don't miss very many at all. You could count them on one hand when I miss, unless I'm injured or sick. Bottom line is aesthetics every day. And if I mention pizza or ice cream, the world is come to an end. We all live in a world. I don't care how you're listening to my voice right now, whether it's on Vision on June the 3rd, in the morning here, or it's on a tape, you live or are close to binge foods. I don't care where you're listening, you are very close to binge foods. And if you go eat them, then me mentioning pizza or ice cream is not the culprit here. It is my lack of fit spiritual condition that will lead me into that, into eating it. I have to stop trotting out the most useless tool I have, my unaided willpower. And that's what I did for decades of my life. When the temptation to eat certain foods would come on, I would trot out the most useless tool I had, and that was my intellect and my willpower, and they always failed. Now, I've said this a million times. I'm going to say it again. This is not a program for people who need it. This is not a program for people who want it. This is a program for people who do it. And that means action. And that means when I am overcome by a spirit that says, I have to have ice cream, I have to have pizza, instead of fighting that thought with willpower, I have to pray. And then I have to translate that into action. And where do I find God? Where do I find this salvation? In the face of one of God's children. And that means I'm going to have to make a phone call. If it's convenient, I can get my butt to a meeting.
That's time.
But most of the time, all right, I'll stop. Thank you very much for your service.
Thank you, Harlan G. in Arizona. And then we've got Nicole L., followed by Victoria L. Good morning, Nicole.
Good morning, Lindsay. Thank you for your service. This is Nicole S., as in Smith, and I'm recovered in Colorado. And this is a great paragraph and just makes me think of all the schemes that I used to think of. And One thing I remember thinking at times that if I could just be in a bubble, just completely protected from the world, that somebody would just slide my meals and, you know, my water and, you know, I would be okay and I wouldn't have to worry about eating. I used to think also have memories that I wish there was just someone that would feed me like they feed a dog. They just give their dog a, you know, portion and what they eat, and and I wouldn't have to worry about food. But what kind of life would that be? You know, that wouldn't be living life, and I would still be, you know, every day faced with, you know, with food in front of me, and you know, and I think also my husband and I just got a bear container for backpacking. That they're really effective at keeping bears out of your food, but when I'm in an unrecovered state, if I had something like that, if I locked all my food up in a container and, you know, I would do whatever it took to get that open. And I would get it open in that unrecovered state. And, you know, I used to, on Thanksgiving, you know, I used to really plan ahead that I wasn't going to, you know, binge on Thanksgiving. And I'd call my OA friends and I'd be so proud of myself. I'd shield myself and I would just have, you know, one heaping plate versus three. And then, you know, like it says, it winds up with a bigger explosion than ever. It was the leftovers that I would just eat uncontrollably. And so all my schemes of trying to control my eating, of combating this illness, it was doomed to failure. The only way I can succeed in this is to have a spiritual awakening and to keep in fit spiritual condition through self and or through work and self sacrifice for others. And that's the only thing that has worked for me. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Nicole S. in Colorado. Next up is Victoria L., followed by Andrea B.
Hi, good morning, everyone. This is Victoria L. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Muncie, Indiana. And, you know, I have this picture of me as a little girl, about maybe 18 months or 2 years old, wearing the cute little frilly dresses they wore back then. And my face is just smeared with chocolate. It's all down my face. It's all down the front of my dress. There's a giant Easter basket in front of me, and I am just this chubby, fat little girl. Fast forward to in my 40s, I would be at client meetings for clients, and I would buy them nice treats and bowls of fine chocolate and stuff. And the clients got to know me so well that they would shove the chocolate down the end of the table to me because they knew eventually, like, I would be the one who ate it all. And I have tried so many things in recovery to get abstinent. The entire time that I've been trying to get abstinent over these past, you know, 13 years in OA and many years before that, I kept thinking if only I could just not eat. Life would just be so simple if I could just not eat. I wouldn't have to make any choices around food. I could just go about my day and be like those spiritual gurus on the mountains who, like, you know, sip air for their nourishment. And my thought was, if only I could be thin, I could be happy. And I have to confess, I still have that feeling most of the time that if only I could be thin, I could be happy. And so for all these years, I have been chasing and chasing and chasing being thin. Now, the miracle is that I have never been chasing being thin. When I'm not eating the food, the feeling of abandonment and lack of love and grief in the pit of my belly that comes to the forefront is so overwhelming, I'd almost rather die than feel those feelings. And so what do? I relapse over and over and over again, chasing both wanting to be thin and then something, anything to die down those feelings that come up in abstinence. I did not know that all these years, what I was actually seeking was a relationship with a loving higher power and presence that I call God in my life, or a great spirit or creator. And that the only thing that can sustain me ultimately, yeah, I have to eat for a living because I'm a human being and our bodies need nourishment and I have to eat my three meals a day. But the thing that's the most critical to me is my relationship with my higher power. Without higher power, I'm nothing. With higher power, I'm never alone. With higher power, I can have those emotions, but I can take those, you know, put them over to them. And I was sharing on an outreach call the other night, like, I also used to resist outreach calls like the plague. Like, what are these rules and non-negotiables? Why do I have to pray and meditate every day? And who made up these rules? And show me where these rules are in the big book. And make outreach calls every day. I'm like, God, I hate cold calling. That's why I'm not in sales. I don't want to cold call three people every day. And here's what I found out. When I pray and meditate every day, I have peace and serenity throughout every day.
Okay.
When I make outreach calls, yep, I'll wrap up. When I make outreach calls, I open the channel to God to hear God through another person's voice. And so today I have 30 days of abstinence, and it's just a damn miracle. Thank you.
Thank you, Victoria L. in Indiana. And then Andrea B., you're up next, and we'll take another group of folks to share. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. Good morning, everyone. Andrea B. in New Rochelle, New York. So when I heard the reading, I immediately was reminded, this is all about control. All of it is about control. And when I scratch below that level of control, it's all about fear. Fear of the unknown, fear of, you name it, it's all listed. And so for me, by having a relationship with a power that is greater than myself, it's a pact that I make with my higher power. I want control, I don't have power. You have power and control. So I think I'll stick very, very close to you and do the work that you ask of me. And that's how I'm able to get the power that I desire, as well as the control. And it's not just about food. If I look at my life, across my life, I want control in everyday situations with others, with institutions, with things. I want that control because I'm terrified of living life on life's terms. So when I go out and I have that craving, I live in New York, there is food everywhere. And so when I encounter that food, it's easier for me to say, God, I need you. Help me walk through this. What do you want me to do? And then pause and wait. And I've found many a times that it's simply in that pause and waiting that the desire is lifted, or maybe an action is guided. And the last thing I want to say is that working with others is that critical step for me that brings me so much closer to my higher power. It's astounding how much closer I get, because in the words of the sponsee, I hear my higher power asking the questions that I've been asking and not willing to ask out loud, but in my heart. And I've often found that in my response to that sponsee, I'm suddenly hearing the answer that I needed to hear. It's an amazing thing. It's a miraculous thing, that relationship. But it's only made possible by having a deeper relationship with a power that's truly greater than myself. And it's not another human being. It's my God. So that's what I wanted to share. Thank you for your service. And I pass.
Thank you, Andrea B. in New York. And then before we take another lineup, I'll just remind everybody where we are. So we are in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous in the chapter Working with Others, page 101, the second paragraph. In our belief, any scheme of combating alcoholism through that one paragraph ending, to do the impossible, have always failed. So who else would like to share this morning?
Pete B.
Larry K.
Kim A.
Gotcha. Pete, Larry, and Kim. Who else?
Pedro B.
Gotcha, Pedro. All right. Let's go with that. Pete B, Larry K, Kim A, and Pedro B. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, thanks, moderator, for taking the meeting. You're doing a great job. My name is Pete B. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm recovered today by God's grace and mercy. You know, these are really interesting paragraphs and a really interesting chapter here, right? So basically what it's saying, what the message in the big book is telling us is that we can go anywhere we want to go. We can do anything we want to do. We meet conditions on a regular basis. If we can't meet these conditions, if we have to be guarded or protected, well, then we have an alcoholic mind and there's something wrong with our spiritual status. Right? That's what it's saying. We're basically, we're not recovered if any of those are the case, right? But then at the same time, we'll hear the fellowship and our fellows claim that, well, if we experience any type of being unsettled or have any basic human emotion, if I don't immediately follow some kind of process that's not dictated or indicated in any of our literature, well, I'm still recovered. Right, like if I can't meet those daily regular emotions that people experience, without reaching out, if I have to reach out to somebody and I have to follow this process, well, that's recovered. I wish somebody could call me up and explain that concept to me, because the message in the big book indicates that my recovery, my peace of mind, my spiritual status depends upon my relationship with God, period. Now, we love to talk about this thing being a we program. I don't see anywhere in the big book that it indicates it's a we program. It's definitely a we fellowship. It's definitely a we fellowship. But the program of recovery, the 12-step recovery program, working with others, all of the chapters in the big book all indicate that my recovery depends upon my relationship with God, period, right? So I don't understand what the insistence on and claiming that, well, we're in fit spiritual condition if I have to call somebody because the red light's taking too long to turn green, or my child is having a little bit is uncomfortable with a decision or something I'm making them doing. I should be able to be restored to sanity and understand that those things cannot create or cause the phenomena of craving, because the doctor's opinion tells us that the only thing that can trigger the phenomena of craving is ingesting the substance or engaging in the behavior that causes it. And by working this program, as it's outlined in the book, the way it's outlined, not more, not less, it's going to produce a desired result, is where I won't have food neutrality. I will cease fighting everybody everything. So that's time. If anybody wants to clear it up and give me a call, I'd greatly appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you, Pete B. And next up is Larry K., followed by Kim A. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Lindsay. Thanks so much for your service. I'm Larry K. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. You know, would it surprise you terribly, would it shock you terribly to know that you know, there are people, even on this line, that claim to be recovered that may not be? No one is the arbiter of that, right? And that's the beauty of this. We all can claim whatever we want. Bill, who wrote the vast majority of this book, correct? Vast majority of it. Whether you think it was divinely inspired or not, he wrote it. Vast majority of it. He also wrote about emotional sobriety as being the next frontier. And avoidance is, I agree with a previous person and others, avoidance is about control. If there's two doors to this deal, door number one marked disease and door number two marked recovery, avoidance is found behind door number one. There are people on the line this morning, even they call themselves recovered, that ate this morning, last night, whatever. There are people on this line that, from an emotional standpoint, remember what Bill wrote about emotional sobriety, treat people horribly and claim to be recovered, but balance it out with nice comment every so often. Okay, the thing is, none of us are perfect, but as humans, we love control. When we avoid things, we get to exert a measure of control. But on page 85, as Harlan, you know, alluded to, there's promises that say that when I work the steps, I no longer need to control. It says it happens automatically. You'll stop beating up on people and bullying people. It'll happen automatically. Interpret it any way you want. Do you think it's just about alcohol? Oh, so short-sighted. Our whole attitude toward liquor, yes, but it just comes. This whole new emotions, ideas, and attitudes, it's in the book. It's in the text. Will be replaced by different emotions, ideas, and attitudes, and will be placed in a position of neutrality. Oh, you think neutrality is just about alcohol or your alcoholic foods? You don't think that, do you? We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. Is the problem just alcohol? Is the problem just food? See, there's a difference between controlling stuff outside our heads in the world versus inside our heads. I'll end with this. If we still have an alcoholic mind, we will continue to eat. If we still have an alcoholic mind, we'll continue to try to control all emotions and we'll rationalize them away. We have to think long and hard. The problem is not just that control doesn't work the way we hope it will. There's consequences to it. We hurt people. We damage people. This is a program of spiritual action. God enables us to experience an internal psychic shift that affects the food for sure, but it affects all manner of how we treat other people. How beautiful that is. Thanks, Lindsay. With that, I pass. It's miraculous.
Thank you, Larry K. in Illinois. And the next up is Kim A., followed by Pedro B.
Hey, good morning. This is Kim A. from New York City. So I often share on this meeting that I don't use a food plan. And this paragraph really explains why. Because, you know, not only is this not only about food, but this is not about food at all, right? The doctor's opinion tells us really clearly at the bottom of XXVIII that we go into that cycle when we put the food down. When we put the food down, we're using willpower, right? And so if we're not working the steps, if we're not developing that conscious contact with our higher power, then our thinking is not going to change. And we have minds that cannot manage the decision to not take that first compulsive bite. That's step one, right? We're powerless over what happens when we take that first compulsive bite. And then we also have a mind that won't let us not take that first compulsive bite. So if I'm putting down my quote-unquote alcoholic foods or whatever foods I think are triggering me, eventually all of those feelings and thoughts, the resentment, the self-pity, the anxiety, blah, 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 whatever it is, it's Tuesday, my toe hurts, my cat is sick, is going to cause me to need to pick up that food again from ease and comfort. So it doesn't matter what that food is. It could be broccoli, right? But then I'm going to go right back into that cycle of powerlessness, and I'm going to come out, you know, just feeling horrible and swearing I'm never going to do it again. And, you know, then I'm going to come up with a new resolution to not pick up food again. And I'm going to put food down using willpower, and it goes on and on and on. None of this is about what's going on outside of ourselves. None of it is about food being a trigger or smells or places. It's all about our flawed attitudes and perceptions leading us to food because we're just so damn uncomfortable all the time. So it's really telling me that if I try to shield myself, for me, by using a food plan or by trying to control or manage my food in any way, that's like not even part of this. This 12-step program has nothing to do with the food, the alcohol, the gambling. That's just the symptom, right? And so we can't change our thinking or the way that we live by managing a symptom. And that's why, for me, I was not able to find any success in OA for the 18 years that I tried to control and manage my food, because it was no different for me than a diet or anything else. It just didn't work for me. So when I worked the steps and let the food take care of itself, and I worked those steps quickly, right? Because otherwise my lying mind that leads me to food that fluffed me right out of this. Thanks. I'll pass with that. This is Kim A. from New York City. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim A. in New York. And then next we've got Pedro B. Good morning, Pedro.
Good morning, Dean C. My name is Pedro B. I am a compulsive overeater. Can I be heard?
We can hear you.
Oh, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Yes, so it says, so I put in the I statement. In my belief, any scheme of combating compulsive eating we propose to shield the sick man, I am the sick man, from temptation is doomed to failure, and it always has. But for me, I'm learning that this is all about transformation. This is all about changing my belief. Change in big groups. I thought that I could do this. I thought I could, if I, you know, abstain from compulsive overeating and follow my food plan and this, I asked in it. And I found out that, you know, the problem really is my inability to stay stop. I can always stop compulsive eating for a second, but to stay stop, that's a whole different ball game. So everything that I try didn't work. So I had to fire myself from the job. And, you know, I was encouraged to develop a relationship with this power greater than myself and to go to this power and ask for help. You know, it says earlier on, it says we need God's help. You know, and I have not been able to stay stopped from compulsive overeating. And today I'm stopped right now. I'm staying stopped right now. And it's all about this relationship with this power that I need to be connected on a 24/7 basis, you know, on a moment-to-moment basis, you know. Any schemes, I tried them all. They haven't worked. You know, and I always end up, you know, eating more. But anyways, I have hope today that I can stay stopped from compulsive overeating today, because this power is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Pedro B. And we've got time for about three more shares. So who else would like to share this morning?
Ken W.H.
Jeannie B.
And Jeannie, and one more. Anybody else?
Yvette L.
All right. Gotcha. All right. So Ken, Jeannie, and Yvette. So Ken W.H., please share with us.
Thank you, Lindsay. Ken W.H., recovered compulsive eater in North Carolina. Prohibition didn't work for an entire nation. Certainly, prohibition hasn't worked for me. And taking commercials off the television never stopped me from doing some of the things they took off the TV, like smoking and liquor and all that stuff. As a kid, if you told me I can't do something, what's my first reaction? I'll show you. You couldn't tell me I can't, because I would want to find out why. Why can't I? Why can't I? So that inquisitive mind would always kick in and take over and take control, if you will. That was me taking control. But I've come to understand that I can't is correct. When I'm faced with food and, you can't eat that, Ken. And, well, you're absolutely right. And I had to come to a place where I could say that. I can't eat that safely. I can eat it if I choose. if I choose on my own power, if I allow the power of my addiction to rule, to be the one I turn to, that power, I'm going to eat. That's simple. I need to turn to God. And I happen to believe a particular saying that comes from another source, but it's I can translate it for me, that I can do all things. And I think that's what this chapter's trying to say. The last few paragraphs have been saying, I can go anywhere. I can do anything. I can do all things. But it is only through the power of God that's true. And that's where the power comes from. That's the only way that can happen. I've heard a lot of things said today about we and us and folks speaking on my behalf who don't know me, but still speaking on my behalf in generalized terms. And I can't speak for you. I don't know what your higher power ultimately will be. I do know, and I do agree with the idea that I need to surrender one day at a time over and over again and turn to the only power that has ever kept me abstinent. And that's the God of my understanding. That's my God. I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Ken W.H. in North Carolina. And next up, we have Jeannie B., followed by Yvette L. Good morning, Jeannie.
Good morning. My name is Jeannie B., JEANNIEB, recovered compulsive overeater from Florida. Today, I am feeling extremely neutral, and it feels so good. And I am so attached to the idea and aligned with, I am not fighting anyone or anything this morning. And it is not always true. And recently, it has often not been true that I feel as neutral as I feel today. And other people can say what they want on this line. I still call myself recovered, whether I'm emotionally neutral or have food thoughts. That's my job here is for me to stay recovered. My job here is to take this amazing big book and this fellowship and these tools and to stay recovered. That's why I'm here, so that I can stay recovered and be of service. And being of service is to stay recovered. So when I read this paragraph, proposes to shield the sick man from temptation, let me tell you, sometimes I need to be shielded from that temptation. Sometimes, even 3+ years into this, sometimes I don't go to that potluck because I'm not feeling safe. Some days I'm like, are you safe to go to the grocery store today? Because I don't want to battle the bakery aisle. I don't want to look and smell the baker. And I haven't touched that stuff in over 3 years. But I am responsible enough now, 3 years in, with your help, with God's help, and with not having the food, not having the cravings in my body anymore. I can now ask myself, am I safe and staying away? But I think the idea, for me, the idea that I shouldn't feel this way, by the way, Bill W. had all kinds of internal demons, and the idea that I am not recovered because I am not food neutral or emotionally neutral does not work for me. Perfectionism does not work for me. I want to stay recovered today, and so I must have grace and compassion with myself and others. I thank you very much for letting me share. I pass.
Thank you, Jeannie B. from Florida. And Yvette L., we've got time for a 2-minute share. So please take us out this morning.
Oh, thank you so much. My name's Yvette L., and I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Connecticut. And I love the talk about, you know, shielding ourselves from temptation. You know, that I tried that, and that does not work. And I'm so grateful to have experienced, you know, the grace of this power, you know, whatever it is, I don't really know, but it's taken away that desire for those foods, you know, so that I can be around them and it's not an issue. And if it's, you know, if I'm not in a fit spiritual condition, then, yeah, then I can make a choice to take good care of myself. But for me, understanding, it took me a long time, basically like 25 years to understand the full problem. And the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than his body. You know, I can't discount, you know, that my body reacts differently, but that's not the biggest part of my problem. You know, my thinking, my mind is the biggest part of the problem. And you know, with that, I need something greater than myself to help me with that. And as long as I'm, you know, doing the best that I can and trying to stay connected to this power, I'm going to be okay. But, you know, my mind tells me all sorts of stories. one of the things I'm bumping into lately is my perceptions, which are pretty whacked most of the time. But, you know, I'm okay with that because I do have access to this power. And when I stay connected to this power, you know, God shows me what I need to work on. I don't even have to effort at that. God shows me, and I'm so grateful to have this power working effectively in my life today. I mean, I, you know, sought it for years in different types of ways, but this beast of a disease has gotten me connected with this power that's given me a life I never expected to have. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Yvette L. in Connecticut, and thank you to everyone who shared this morning. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following the closing. The share ID for today, Tuesday, June 3rd, is 22,488. That is 22488. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Will Patrick O. please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning. This is Patrick O. I'm a real compulsive eater. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and to countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.